This episode is brought to you by our friends at PeopleBench and Paperly. PeopleBench specialise in helping schools build their collective workforce and retain their staff. We all know the future of work is fast, flexible and connected, and we also know the crunch for talented teachers is on our doorstep. PeopleBench are here to help you manage and plan your workforce with an intuitive platform that can provide all the data you need to make evidence-informed decisions about your next staff and workforce strategy. Head to peoplebench.com to learn more. Paperly is also back and they're proud to support the Ed Leaders podcast. Paperly fills the gap in your traditional SIS or LMS and is designed to help your school create paperless, time-efficient systems. Check them out at paperly.education. Now let's get to today's show. All right, welcome to Ed Leaders, the podcast covering all the interesting ideas about leadership, strategy, culture, and the business of K-12 education. I'm your host, Luke Keller, and joining me each week in the chair is my co-host and colleague, Matthew Irving. Now, before we get to today's show, if you haven't signed up for the Ed Leaders newsletter, you're missing out. Matthew, what are they missing out on?
I love that you asked me this question, and every time you ask the question, I'm ill-prepared. We were just sort of talking about, you know, some people can't find time in their schedule for exercise. But not our guest today, not our guest today. And some people don't find time to read. And so if you're one of those people and you actually need to get going with your reading, this is a perfect place to start. The Ed Leaders newsletter, check it out. And that might just awaken the great reader in you.
Well done, Matt. I'll give you, that's pretty good today, using a little bit of, you know, ammo from an earlier conversation from 2 minutes ago. I'm going to give you 8.8 out of 10 today. Well played. You can sign up to the Ed Leaders newsletter at edleaders.com.au. Now on to today's guest, Darren Cox. Darren was the principal at St. Philip's Christian School in Chesnock, growing their enrolments from 200 to 1,100 students from 2014 to 2021. Where he spent plenty of time contributing to the Hunter region of independent schools and AIS New South Wales. He stepped out of schools in 2021 to work as the manager of school design with Sydney Catholic Schools. But recently he announced he's back, back in a chair. He was couldn't stand to be out of the chair for that long and we're taking on the role of new principal at Marsden Park Anglican College. And we're going to get to that role and what he's doing with that new school today. So without further ado, let's get to it. Darren, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, boys. Great to be here. Love it.
We're excited to have you. Now, you know that we love to start the journey with your story in education. How did you get into education? Why are you in education? And a little bit about your story along the way.
It's good. Well, what I'll do for this answer, Luke, because I'll keep this a lot briefer than I did for the first time I applied for assistant principal's job where they asked me that question and it took me about 35 minutes to answer just the one question. So I've honed the answer somewhat. So the reason I actually became a teacher is from a very old movie called To Sir With Love. And I saw this guy make just this incredible difference in the lives of young people that otherwise didn't have anyone else really believing in them. And something just tugged at my heartstrings and went, I want to be that guy for those students. And so teaching was it for me. And so I started in the western suburbs of Sydney in public education. And then that has seen me go in many, many places. And there was a beautiful moment at one stage teaching in the UK in the exact suburb that the movie To Sir With Love was modeled on. And I went, that's it. I've done it. So it was exciting and then transitioned into Christian schooling. That saw me move my very young family out of Sydney to a town called Cessnock, where I just believed they needed the power of an excellent education up there and was able to get a principal's role up there after being the deputy for a couple of years. Took what some of my principal colleague friends have called a mid-career sabbatical to go and work amongst a large group of schools trying to do really wonderful things there. Gave me a chance to sort of see education not just from a school base but actually from a systems approach to schooling and how do we scale things up. Like if you do something in one school, how do you actually make that happen across 100, 150 schools? So that was interesting organizational learning in that regards. But my heart has always been for school communities and seeing people absolutely thrive and grow. And I'm made to be in community. And I just felt, yeah, I was missing out in that regard. And so I've now worked across all three sectors. So I've got friends who joke that I'm ready to become the next educational minister now that I've got 30 odd years of teaching and across all sectors. So who knows where the next step will be.
Well, very succinct, Darren. You know, we're going to give you an 8.5 out of 10 for that. I'm just being very clear about our rating system today.
Yeah, that's good.
Darren, you know, you talk about heart there and at the center of what you're talking about is purpose. you know, in what I'm hearing from your voice this morning, I'm really curious that step from teacher to leader. Talk to us a little bit about that part of the journey and what was that thing that drew you into leadership?
So there's a couple of things. I think it's interesting when you reflect back, to, you know, when you're a young person, and I often had, I reflect back now and I know that I had leadership tendencies because I was able to convince other kids to do stuff at school that they probably shouldn't have been doing. And for some reason, they always got caught and I never did. And so you reflect back now and you go, oh, right, so that's sort of what leadership was in its, in a crass, raw 15, 16-year-old boy form. But then in a teaching capacity, I was able to lead one of the schools that we got recognized for a Director General's Award for what we did in PDHPE. And so in the Director General and a couple of the other leaders presenting, they asked me afterwards about, oh, you know, something about me being assistant principal. I said, oh, no, I'm just one of the teachers. And they were the first people who actually spoke into me about, actually, we see in you the opportunity to actually lead in education. Until then, I was just a really wired, energetic young teacher who just took on challenge after challenge in schools. And so having someone older, more experienced speak into me that way was like, wow, okay, that really got me thinking about that. And not long after, I sat in a staff meeting where for an hour we talked about what color pencils we could use to mark students' work. And I went, you know, something involves running this show. I wouldn't have to sit here for an hour in this conversation right now. And to be honest, that was when I went, okay, he saw something in me. I'm sitting through this that I don't want to be a part of anymore. I'm starting to put some applications in. And that was the journey. And then it was interesting because I am wired as a, I don't know. I got described the other week to the parents as an enthusiastic. I think the adjective changes according to how old you are. So when you're a 51-year-old male, it's now enthusiastic. When you're a 16, 15-year-old boy, it's something completely different. But being wired that way, I was always trying to fit into the box and conform as to what I thought schools and school leaders wanted. And so, you know, I'd take my piercings out before interviews and I'd speak a little bit more calmly and whatever. Anyway, I went into this one and missed out on ones that I thought I was made for. Ended up at another school where they invited me for interview, forgot to take out my piercings and things, bleach blonde mohawk at the time. And I was sort of just, I don't know, some of the questions must have just caught me off guard, just being a bit more natural myself. And that was the job that I got. And I sort of learned from there that actually just being authentically who you are is always going to come out a lot better off. And so the journey for me, and that was when I was a 27-year-old young guy, got an assistant principal's role in a public school. And so that's one thing I've always been really on about, and with staff, and, you know, we'll talk about culture and things. Actually allowing people to authentically be who they are, I think, is really important. And that was a very important step and an important learning for me to always be authentically who I am. And so that was that first step into leadership in that capacity. And then from there, it just sort of grew, I suppose.
And I mean, you talked there about kind of that journey with different people maybe tapping you on the shoulder versus at some points going, actually, I could do a better job of this. Is there anything that you could discern for a listener around, you know, how much each one of those fed into your kind of leadership journey? And also along the way, were there certain people, you know, that were either role models in the right way, but sometimes there's also role models in the wrong way, and you kind of learn from those people as much about the type of leader you don't want to be as the leader that you do want to be?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So it was definitely more about actually wanting to be able to actually help other people. That was where the sort of leadership matured into. And definitely people seeing something in you is hugely important. And I think that that's a really, it's still a very key aspect of to me and now in my leadership now, is actually who people are is far more important than what they do. And I think that at the heart of a leader, that's what you want to see, is you actually want to give value and worth to people, as we do students and staff. And so there's definitely been some people along the way who are able to see that, even though I might not have necessarily fit a mold, whatever the mold is. I've always tried to create and shape my own molds. And so so people seeing something in you is just really, really powerful, you know. And then I had some leaders along the way, yeah, who might not have necessarily gone about things the best way. And so that created a culture in the school that also had you looking at it and actually now starting to really consider organizations and organizational leadership. Like, okay, why does the staff feel this way? Oh, it's because the messages are coming this way and this way. And it's because of that. All right, like put that into yourself and be aware of that. So that was really important. Then I had another leader who I generally tend to be quite relational and joyful. And this one leader very early on, principal, as I was assistant principal, just got me in having tough conversations with different challenging staff that might not have been necessarily performing where the school would like them to. And she pulled me in it. All right, Darren, this is your thing to work on with these staff this year. And so you had to find another way. You had to like actually learn some skills as well as just your natural positive personality type of thing. That only gets you so far. And so then that leader was really important in actually trying to develop and hone some skills in there in regards to that. Then I had a business manager. He said, okay, when I first became principal, he said, okay, Darren, you've got to learn the business here. And so that business manager, and I sent him a message when I got this job here again, this time just saying, Shane, thanks, mate, for training me, not just for doing the business manager's role, which he clearly could have just done, but every step, unpacking it, training me, educating me, like that was really important in this context in being able to lead an independent school where business is so much of it. So definitely along the way, there have been different people speak into different areas, yeah.
And just as leaders, you know, are the great source of learning in so many different ways, Luke and I also talk about some of our greatest learnings come from being outside of school. And so, Darren, the last few years you've been outside schools, but in the system, what are some of your greatest learnings being on the outside of a school for a small period of time?
Yeah, that was a really interesting time. Looking at how organizations operate and how decisions are made was really interesting for me as to then how we communicate some of those decisions. That was interesting for me, the timing of those things. Why is one school gets something, but another school doesn't? So then you think, okay, I'll bring that back to my school. Why does one department get something and then another school, another part of the department not get something? So that were interesting learnings for me there as to also knowing why, but then actually how to communicate that with people in a way that people could appreciate and understand. That was important for me. It was interesting seeing, you know, working with an executive director who has, oh, how many employees do we have? Like 15,000, you know, 20,000 employees. Well, seeing how that person operates is vastly different to, you know, my last school, we had 165, right, when I finished there. That's a massive chasm. So how do you lead that type of organization? Yeah, they were all interesting learnings, definitely along the way.
And you talked earlier about especially the scaling. You know, how do you take something from one school that's, you know, super interesting or being done really, really well, and you kind of go, well, if it can be done well there, I'm just going to drop it into eight other schools. And I think, you know, more broadly in education, you know, we often think, oh, that's a really highlight program over there. Let's replicate that. Like there's super interesting challenges around doing that. I'm wondering if you could kind of describe, you know, an example of, you know, something that you saw being done really, really well and how you maybe tried to apply that in other schools and the success or failure of that.
Yeah. So my last school, St. Philip's, we started on a teacher training model where, you know, we employed teachers, you know, in their first year of teaching for a couple of days a week as a teacher's aide and sort of, you know, learning on the job type of approach and worked with a university. And so you do that at one school where you take on, you know, two per year group, you end up with sort of, you know, students or whatever. You do that in one school. Well, when you do that across 150 schools, you're now talking about trying to place thousands of university students across their school as opposed to St. Philip's where I just had to place them in one school. You know, you've got to find different leaders. You've got to find enough different teachers. You've got to find finance to actually fund that. That was interesting where you go, well, it works in one. Let's just do it across all of them. And then trying to get your head around the scale of financially what that means and personnel requirements, what that means is, yeah, that was an interesting learning. You know, there's a number of courses that I've done with staff and, you know, you always get asked, I think, when you go from one school to another school, what's something you've done at that school that you'll take to the other school? And there's some things that you do and others contextual. A couple of those courses that I did, I was like, oh, yeah, why wouldn't these schools want to do that? Until you start to multiply, you know, a $350 course across, you know, 10,000 employees, oh, that's a different budgetary requirement. So, yeah, they were interesting learnings.
And Darren, you know, let's talk about coming from that system perspective back into schools. And, you know, you're founding another school, you know, a school from scratch, Marsden Park, and must be hugely exciting. I wonder what inner work was happening for you. What was pulling at your heartstrings to move back into schools and this opportunity?
Yeah, I think probably a couple of things. So one was really just that sense of community. working with staff and students and parents, like I missed that really deep sense of connection that you have with being a part of community. And I think that, to be honest, I think that's a real strength of schools, and what schools offer is that sense of community. You know, often when you ask a year 12 student, you know, what are you going to miss or what was the most important thing? They almost always talk about relationships, right? Like relationships matter in schools, and we can talk about online learning and whatever else it be, and they're all good things and good opportunities. But the thing we always talk about is relationships. I miss that. I miss that a lot. So that had me going. And the other thing is that I would suggest that I'm quite pioneering, entrepreneurial, whatever word, language you want to put into that space. And when you're part of a large system, you just don't have that same level of opportunity per se, and definitely not the same level of autonomy in there. And so to start a brand new school, having sort of been on that similar journey up in Cessna, I'm in my absolute sweet spot, you know. And I talked to some aspiring principals only a couple of weeks ago, and I talked about just the importance of fit. Like there were some other schools that had jobs come up around over the last year or so, and I just didn't even consider them or look at them because I just knew they just weren't the right fit for me. And so that sense of fit is just hugely important. Like, you know, when you're starting up, like, you know, next year we start year 7 up, like there's nothing that exists. So therefore, to create momentum, you need someone with plenty of momentum and energy to actually get the thing moving and rolling. And, you know, it's like, you know, I don't know, you think about the bobsled team, like someone's got to get the thing moving before the driver does their thing. You know, you think about that curling, someone's got to drag that thing forward before they sled it or release it onto the ice and then just create the conditions for it to land. And I think that that's sort of the way I'm wired, is to let's get this thing moving and going, and then let's get the right team and help it land, and then create the conditions to help it land. So I think it was just a perfect fit for me, to be honest with you.
Do you think that you've gotten better at understanding like your fit and where a fit happens as you've gotten older and further into your leadership journey? And is there any advice that you can give to like that younger leader who sees jobs come up and they want to go for them all, but they don't really understand the fit and how to understand if they are a fit?
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I was younger, I just thought that I could do everything everywhere, right? As you get older, you get a little bit more circumspect on that. Yeah, my son's about to start a Bachelor of Sports Management, right? And I'm like, okay, mate, you know you're probably going to start with like the, you know, the local swimming pool. He goes, I said, you're probably not going to land the, you know, the manager of the Australian cricket team. He goes, Dad, someone's got to do it. And I go, all right, son, back your confidence, you know, 17, 18-year-old. And I reckon that that's like, that's no different to 27, 30-year-old who's sitting in a school somewhere going, I could do that. Well, someone's got to do it. Why not be me, you know? So I think I have learned that a lot more, that circumspect. And I think also just coming back to like, you know, I've done a lot of work just recently again with staff here on vision and values. And I think you want to look at that and what's written down, what does that mean in practice, and how do I connect with that is really, really important. Like what is in the core of your DNA? Is that fully aligned with where you're at? And I think that that is really, really important. I would talk a lot to people about the importance of fit. Like, you know, there's schools everywhere and we know that some schools feel different, you know, even though the structures are fairly similar, right? The skeleton, the framework's fairly similar, but schools are different within them. So therefore, you know, how as staff we discern that, help staff understand that, I think is really, really important as well.
And Darren, one of the things you're sort of describing there is having a very strong sense of insight into yourself. If you're going to look at values and you're going to look at purpose and you're going to line these things up, but if you're going to have confidence as well, just curious, you've come across leaders that actually don't necessarily have that insight and you've gone, you know what, I'm not sure it's the right job for you, but they still aren't reading the play.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's interesting because when the number of theories in life, and one of them is that when you are sort of out there as the mischievous, cheeky student, teachers have no issues letting you know what you're doing wrong. You know, your parents have no issues letting you know what you do wrong. But if you're someone who comes across quite whatever, but you're carrying a bit of pride or arrogance or whatever, no one's pulling you up on that as much. You know, it's easy to pick the loud, verbose, out there person as it is to the quiet person sitting in the, you know, but has a whole lot of negative attitudes here or there or lacks capacity or whatever else it be in that regard. I had one guy who was a leader in the school already, applying for a middle leadership role, like the next level of leadership role, and someone else in the school got it. We're still happy for him to cap the leadership role that he had. And oh my gosh, the toys came out of the cot like you cannot believe. So then I was able to say, well, to be honest with you, this is some of sort of the character tendencies that we had sort of seen. And for someone who already had a leadership role to then act like, I was like, oh, wow, okay. So, yeah, I think that finding a way to help people develop personally as well as professionally is a really big key of what I have done with staff over the last decade and continue to do with staff. I think that there's a great learning in there to have that really good sense of self, and then actually how we see and that plays out is really important. So I do a lot on developing of self.
You've talked there about developing, you know, the leaders around you, like developing your staff. I'm interested in your own professional development along that journey. And we do like to ask the question around, you know, like you've obviously got certain strengths that you're bringing to the table, but, you know, somewhere along the line, you've probably got a few weaknesses in there. And I'm wondering, you know, what you've done to understand those weaknesses firstly, because that can be a challenge sometimes for leaders. Mm-hmm. And secondly, kind of what you do or what you've done to start addressing some of those weaknesses, whether you double down on your strengths only and don't worry too much about the weaknesses, surround yourself with people that, you know, might be able to assist there, or whether you've done things that are specifically, you know, to try and address that.
Yeah, I take a lot of learnings from sport. And so people who've worked with me for a long time know that pretty much every staff meeting is going to include at least one sports analogy illustration to prove a point. And, you know, to prove a point, you know, like we've got Pat Cummins, fast bowler, captain of the Australian cricket team, but he's not also the wicketkeeper and the opening batsman. You know, we've got Michael Jordan who plays guard, but he's not also the centre, and he's not also the defensive, you know, rebounder that Rodman was that he needed to succeed and get the ball back, right? So in that regard, really happy to understand, gosh, I need a team around me who are actually going to help us win the game. And so for me, it's about assembling teams and actually bringing out the best in people and celebrating that. And not thinking that I've got to actually be in control, but actually set very clear vision, clear direction, then get out of the way and let people do it how they're going to be. And we just keep shaping them along the way through encouragements and accountabilities and targets and all those types of things that we put in place. But really, really important to understand, gosh, you need a team. You need a whole orchestra, right? You need everyone. And everyone needs to be the best of who they are. And my job is to actually bring out the best in that player and bring out the best in that player and get those two players playing brilliantly together. And so in there, I know that there's things that I can do and I can't do. So I've just employed a head of senior school to kick us off and drive us forward for the next 6 years, right? And in our sort of second, third interview, she was asking about the first interview and she says, I couldn't work out whether you wanted someone exactly like you or not. And I said, oh, no. I said, you're exactly what I need. And she said, that's exactly what I went home and said to my husband. I said, I'm exactly what he needs. And she is, right? Like categorically. And we all know it. Great. Let's celebrate. We're putting the team together, you know? So I sit very happily in that. Now, I think then that as a leader, how you carry yourself with a sense of, I don't know what the right word is, not self-confidence, but assurances or whatever, that actually just because they're excellent at that, and your head of senior school is awesome at that, and your head of business is excellent at that, doesn't mean that you should feel worse or concerned or actually I'm going to try and control them. No. We want to bring out the best in that. And once again, a sporting illustration, like Manchester United under Alex Ferguson had the best players in the world, and somehow we got all of those best players playing together to win things, and no other manager since then has been able to handle the amount of ego or talent or whatever in the team and actually harness them together to win. So what was it about him that wasn't put off by big personalities and highly capable people? So, yeah, it's interesting how you bring out the best but still actually remain actually I'm pretty happy with who I am and how I am. So I think that's one aspect. Do I double down on strengths? I know what they are, but I've got weaknesses, but you've got to get better at some of those things. So I get better at them. It's just that I don't love them. And so there's things that you have to do. But I very much believe in a strengths-based approach to education and to schools, which means that just because you carry a role doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do everything in that role that someone else in another school does in that role, because we've got different strengths. So it'll be aspects of the office of that title that you carry that you'll need to do. But actually, are there elements of that that we can distribute and have others in the team and elsewhere actually do and bring so that the organization is flourishing rather than trying to drive people into a pigeonhole that you've got this title, so therefore you need to be able to do all of these aspects that go with that. I'm really challenged that we can draw out the best in each other. I think that that's where you get cultures of well-being occurring, because people feel valued, they get to operate in a strength, they know they're contributing to the greater good, and it's not just about, oh, if you've got a title and a position, you can do this or you can't. So whilst you do need to be aware of those areas, improve upon them, have enough knowledge to speak in, doesn't mean you've got to be the person who's the best at it and driving it.
Darren, you've been talking there about sort of bringing the leadership team together, and just want to reflect back on the Marsden Park experience that you're in. Not only are you bringing a team together, but you are shaping and creating vision and shaping and creating culture in a vacuum, if you like. So talk to us about those competing priorities, how you are managing vision and culture through this establishment of your team and programs. It sounds like quite a really interesting ecosystem. And I wonder, there are probably times where you look back around the corner and you can't see anyone. Talk to us about the experience and putting those things together.
Yeah. So elements early, like when you move in, you try and discern really quickly what's going on in the place and what do we need and things like that. I think that organizations do reflect their leaders somewhat. So how do you bring some of that through early? So one of my things is joyfulness. Like, I actually want the place to be a joyful place, like there's young people around. If we can't enjoy life, so how do we bring that in? We're still setting standards. We set, you know, early on we set a mantra of playful but professional. Let's enjoy life. Like, young people are genuinely funny. They say funny things. Let's laugh at that. You know, let's laugh at each other and ourselves and create a happy, positive place to be. And we can be excellent at what we do. So therefore, we've worked on creating that as a bit of a culture. It's actually being able to be permission giving. You know, I think there's, you know, something like sort of 80% yes, wherever I can. Let me look for reasons to say yes rather than reasons to say no. I think a lot of schools, we just go, oh, no. Actually, why would I say no? Actually, let me say yes and let that person sort of get in there. So I've been trying to create that as a culture of permission giving, that actually things are possible. Let's dream. Let's innovate. Let's create. Let's be open in that space. And then I've been working with, we had a consultant come in for X number of workshops with staff around vision, mission, and our values. And then that culminated last week where I was to present that to staff, which was a really exciting afternoon, the culmination of sort of, you know, a couple of months of workshops with consultants and with each other. I presented that to primary staff, the new staff yesterday and next week with all the parents that are coming along to a night. So, and at the same time, it's just like a whole lot of organization that needs to occur, right? Kids need lockers. There's a uniform to get up and develop. There's a logo to get up. There's mottos to come up with. Like, you need all of that stuff, as well as just some, like, they need textbooks the next year and they're going to be ordered at some stage, right? So it's interesting, those competing pressures of big picture, culture, where we're going, and at the same time, just some of the daily operational stuff that needs to occur alongside it.
As a leader of a school, you're probably aware that on average, around 80% of the cost of running a school is the salaries and on-costs of its workforce. And yet most schools do not have a comprehensive visibility of their workforce data and metrics. That's where PeopleBench excel through their Painted in School workforce benchmarking and strategy development platform. They use data science, machine learning, and predictive analytics to provide insights and resources that support school leaders to become self-sufficient in responding to the future of work in schools. The platform can benchmark your workforce data to other like schools, build your workforce strategy, and monitor progress on metrics like teacher resilience and workforce culture, while keeping an eye on how these factors impact student outcomes. A PeopleBench subscription provides your school or system with access to their school workforce research, school workforce benchmarking tools, dashboards and reports, workforce resilience tracker, their workforce culture tracker, their workforce strategy tracker, and much, much more. Check them out at peoplebench.com. I've got a question for you. How many paper processes does your school have? Well, that's where Paperly comes in. Paperly is an integrated one-stop shop of intelligent workflows that can help your staff save time and reduce that administrative burden that we know exists in schools and we all face on a daily basis. They're a completely modular admin management solution, meaning you just choose whichever of the 16 super useful modules that your school needs. My personal favorite that we use is their calendar module, which makes the administration of the school calendar so much easier. Check out paperly.education today and chat with the team about a demo for your school. Now back to today's show. It would be quite obvious to me, you know, seeing you through the camera here and having met you in person as well, that a lot of people would look to you as an inspiration for being a principal and for being a leader. I guess I'm wondering for you personally, you know, where do you draw inspiration from? You've talked about your sporting analogies and whatnot, but are there people or things that you draw your inspiration from for your own personal leadership?
Individuals in my day-to-day world, not so much. I try to surround myself with people who challenge my thinking. I like that. Like, I like people who challenge the why and the status quo. Like, I love that. Like, there's so many things in life where, you know, someone goes, oh, no, that, like, especially in schools where there's so many rules, which, you know, I try to see suggested guidelines, right? But there's so many of them that you think, okay, well, once upon a time, that wasn't a rule. So therefore, that now doesn't mean that it's from the tablets of Moses that it now needs to be a rule forever. Like, at some stage, it wasn't a rule. So what's the next iteration of that rule going to be? So I like to hear and challenge from people in that regard. A guy who actually has done that to me is Peter Hutton. I love just chatting with him about why and how and wherefore and what next. Like, he does stretch my boundaries of every time I sort of think that I'm sort of, you know, disrupting things, I go, oh, well, he's just shaking and rattling the whole cage. And so I've enjoyed that, and I've gone a lot, and I've been a part of, you know, future schools with them for a while. That's been great. That's actually the one that I should be giving credit to. So, yeah, that one is excellent, just to shake me in there. There's some other principals that I see, some of the things that they've done at schools, and I go, oh, yeah, okay, that's cool. I like where your thinking is there. I think one of the interesting aspects of well-being and life is still carrying yourself with a sense of awe and wonder. Like, young people have that. They see something and there's like a wow, right? And then as we get older, I think we can sometimes lose that a little bit. And I think that's a really important aspect of well-being, is still finding the awe and wonder in small things and seeing what's possible in that. You know, it's a great thing about, you know, we didn't invent electricity by inventing better candles, right? So who has done something different? And then you go, okay, what does that mean in the school context? Why can't we do that? Like, what could we do there? So, you know, I do like to hear from those people and consider that stuff.
And Darren, I wonder what things outside school give you life.
Yes, outside of school. I lived in the Hunter Valley for 12 years, so there's some local produce up there that I did used to enjoy my friends out in that area of the world. So that was helpful. Quite involved at church, so faith is a big thing for me as well. I'm fortunate enough now to live near the beach, so that's quite nice. And I am a cricket tragic, and so all of those things combined centre, you know, and just I'm quite a social being. I get my energy from being around good people. So hanging out with friends on a weekend is good. So, and going to the gym. The gym is important. I think there's something about that. I mean, like, as a principals, I think that, you know, as leaders, I think what's really important is you need to grow your capacity. Like, you're going to have a lot of late nights and then back it up with early meetings the next morning. And you have to be able to do that day in, week out. So I think that physical and emotional capacity is really important. I talk to young leaders around that. Like, you know, we have parent-teacher interview nights. You might have two of them and everyone's like smashed. Oh, I'm so tired. Well, you want to step into the principal thing that next night, you've got a school board meeting. And then the night after that, there's another thing. And so I think that's really important. So, yeah, so the gym and getting out. I don't sit still too often.
And what time are you going to the gym? Just curious, Darren, because I am thinking about adopting a more healthy lifestyle.
I do. The alarm goes off at 4:20. So I am up early.
That's a bit early.
That is a little bit silly early, to be honest, but I now live 50 minutes from school, so I need to make sure I've got enough time to get it in. In the morning, so in the afternoon, I know a lot of people say they prefer the afternoon to exercise. And so my last school, we implemented a massive approach to physical health and well-being across staff and students. It changed the culture of the school. In the afternoon, there was legitimately too many excuses. your kids have got sport, the kids have got an appointment, you've got an afternoon work thing. Like, there are legitimate excuses, but at 5 o'clock in the morning, there's only one excuse, and that's you.
Let me dive into that a little bit more. Yep. Just on the staff aspect you mentioned there at the last school about a well-being approach there. I just got a sense that there was something a little more than, hey, we're offering yoga once a week.
So it was a number of years ago. It was a proactive approach to well-being. Like, you know, we can keep employing counselors into schools, really, do good work, except you are never going to have the right number of staff or students in that zone. So therefore, what can we do proactively to speak into that? We all know that every medical practitioner, psychologist, et cetera, the first thing they're going to ask you is, what are you doing for exercise? We know that fruit and veg is just as important as not smoking. We know that exercise is just as important as, not doing whatever. And yet we choose that as an optional extra. So I talked to staff about that. So we went on this approach to well-being in there, and I encouraged everyone to take their first step. Like, what's the first step? You know, you think back when we see our child first take their first step. It's an awful, wobbly, unsophisticated, imbalanced step that hardly even qualifies as a step, but the family celebrates and claps and cheers and takes a video and wants another wobbly one, right? Until the point where they're walking and then they're running away from you in the shopping center. That's another whole issue, right? But the challenge of the staff was, okay, take that first awful wobbly step. It's not going to be a park run. It's not going to be a 4:30 in the gym, but it might be, what's that first one? And can the second one just be a little bit more? And we had staff members who had never run in their life end up doing park runs. And we had people who'd never been to, we built an incredible gym and put fitness instructors in there as part of the PE, changed the way we did the PE curriculum. I think that the days of badminton, volleyball and stuff where we got kids sitting on the side, oh, I don't have the wrong uniform, sir. Oh, no, I don't have the right shoes. Actually, they're probably not getting the physical exercise they need. So we put them in a gym as part of their PE curriculum from years 5 to 10, 3 times a week. And we took some checks on how they were feeling beforehand and after it. And we did some research around we put some students' math classes straight after fitness classes. It was all provided to the staff and their families as well. And it changed the tone and the culture of the entire school.
That's absolutely extraordinary to think that. Who would have thought something good would come of physical exercise, Luke? Who would have thought? One of the things, you've obviously experienced a lot of joy and a lot of excitement, and a lot of things have come to fruition, some of the things that you've worked out with your team. I'm wondering if you could explain one of your most spectacular fails.
A spectacular fail. I reckon that my spectacular fails have just been going too fast for people. That's been a spectacular fail. It's just going too fast. And the first time I met with I then went on a journey with this strength. And so I met with this strength coach, and this person and I had never had a conversation before. She sort of read my strengths profile thing, came in, and the first comment, first thing she says is, now, Darren, you know that everyone's not going to work at your capacity. I was taken aback. I was like, what do you mean? Like, I'm just getting up and I'm just doing life. And like, we've all got 24 hours in the day. So just make the most of every hour, minute, second, and that was like a revelation to me that, okay, maybe I do move at a different pace to other people. And so that was an interesting learning. And then you reflect back and you go, all right, okay. So in that situation, I just gone too fast for people. So I think the most spectacular fails is more just, and then it's about backtracking to, catch up with people. And so, so now I'm a lot more aware of that, and it's about reading the times as to what pace to move at and when and things like that. So that would be the thing where I just moved too fast for people. But I now surround myself with people who just do it a bit differently to me, and so they're a good barometer for me as to where we're going and how we're going. And I believe in a healthy stretch. Like, a rubber band that's too tight is actually probably no good, but a rubber band that's all floppy and loose is actually past its use-by date. There's a healthy stretch for a rubber band. And I think that us as individuals, it's about for everyone trying to find that healthy stretch. If we're all just sitting back, chilling out, casual, it's like, oh, come on, you got more in you than that. And at the same time, if people are tight, it's like, all right. So there's another loose analogy.
You talked earlier about your thankfulness for a previous business manager taking you on that journey to teach you, the business of schooling. I'm wondering if you could share what you see as one or two of the biggest challenges for principals and school leaders in running the business that is a school.
Yeah, It's things like we all want good facilities, right? And in this day and age, when parents are choosing independent schools, like even us, right? They're choosing a brand new independent school. We have 110 students enrolled for year seven that doesn't exist, and yet they've chosen us. Well, they're not necessarily choosing us with the same pioneering spirit that maybe families in the 1970s, you know, if I use Christian schooling as the loose sort of example there rather than historical 100-year-old schools, that like families that chose Christian schooling in the 1970s weren't choosing it expecting facilities and co-curricular, et cetera, to be at this extreme level. They were somewhat pioneering themselves in that space, whereas now people choose an independent school and they choose it with an expectation from day one. So therefore, how do I provide facilities? How do we provide co-curricular? How do we provide all those opportunities within a limited funds? I think that's important. You want to really believe in building into your staff so that they feel highly valued, highly skilled and trained and equipped, and you want to spend money into that situation. And so I think it's those competing pressures there, whilst at the same time trying to just, you know, look after staff, you know, fees, et cetera, where every area of the staff, like there's never been a department of the school ever gone, hey, Darren, I think you can hand back some of those assistants, mate. Oh, I'm carrying too many. Actually, Darren, learning support, we're all over it, mate. Take a couple of them off. Like no one ever, right? The science team, actually, mate, we're really good for science. Like never, right? And so every faculty wants more personnel and whatever. And you're trying to build a facility and you're trying to build into the people you've got and you've got to meet all of your, you know, your business requirements and things. That is a competing pressure in that space, I would suggest.
And Darren, how much time are you spending on the business? You know, I think about when you're at St. Phillips, yep, but now you're at Marsden, yep, Park, sort of starting from scratch. You know, what does a typical day look like in that business context?
Yeah, how much would I spend a day? I spend probably close to an hour a day, but then there's other times in the week where it's a long period of time where I'll sit with the business manager for long periods of time and shuffle the staffing load around. What would it look like if we took out this FTE here, here, and here? And what would it look like there? I think that one of the interesting aspects in that is, like, we talk to young people about, you know, the C's and however many of them there are, depending on which author we've read that week, right? But critical and creative thinking is really interesting. We want that in young people. So what does that look like in an adult? What does that look like when I come to budget? It can be transactional, line items in, line items out. But actually, is there a sense of creativity and creative problem solving in moving something from that area for this next year to put it down into that year over there? And so I think that that's where I spend a lot of time with the business manager, looking at that and then forecasting 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, especially in a growing school, where I'm trying to anticipate four streams, when will I add the fifth stream, when do I add the sixth stream, well, the junior school, we've currently got four streams in K and one, is that going to follow all the way through to six, so therefore they're going to need more? So you're trying to forecast all the way forward to 10 years at the same time meet some of your requirements for the here and the now. So that's where sitting with it and just bringing that sense of creativity and trying to find that space in your day is probably the challenge when everyone just wants a minute at the door. I think that's the journey there.
You've talked a lot today about staff, you know, bringing the right staff together, you know, the importance of getting the right mix in your team. When we caught up recently, you and I kind of talked about, you know, the number of staff that have kind of applied, you know, to be part of your new school versus kind of the narrative or the reality,
yes,
in many cases, yep, of staff shortages. And, you know, you and I talked about profiles in that moment and the importance of your profile and, you know, things like LinkedIn in creating that profile. You know, I'm wondering whether you can kind of talk to your experience in, you know, recruiting staff recently in a, yeah, challenging, you know, macro environment with staff and, you know, the importance you place on creating that profile,
yeah,
for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So it's interesting coming back to Sydney, you know, 3 years ago after having been in regional town. So when I started up there in a regional town, not everyone at that point in time was busting their skins to get out of Sydney and go and live in Cessnock. Like demographically speaking, it's a low socioeconomic town. It's starting to shift somewhat, but it's a low socioeconomic town. And trying to get people to move away from their friends, their support networks, their churches, their whatever, where they've grown up, trying to get them to move to Cessnock to work in a hard town. And, you know, lots of people who would apply would see St. Phillips, I know St. Phillips Christian College. Oh, that sounds nice. And they used to often leave the last word out, which was SESCOC, which means kids aren't going to go, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir, and sit there quietly like little angels. Like, these are hard students, right? It was a hard town, confrontational parents. So that's been my lived experience for 15 years has been trying to recruit staff. Like, this is not a today problem. It is for a number of our schools here going all of a sudden, but staff always want to work at our school. They've always wanted to work here. Well, okay, well, welcome to a newfound reality. Welcome to the how the people at Moree, Cessnock, Dubbo, Wagga, et cetera, have been feeling for well over a decade, for 12, 15 years. You actually had to have a strategy back then. My strategy then was to try and present at different conferences and have a profile there. It was to speak at universities and to get into that space. And I think then that I've carried that with me. So, yeah, LinkedIn would definitely be part of that. It's the importance of actually making a difference in staff life. Like Cessnock, we were able to raise up leaders who then went to other schools and other situations. And even yesterday, we met with the new high school staff and three of them. Oh, I had colleagues saying it'd be quite amazing to work at a school and the way you think about education and the way you create culture. And that's how I was able to get a number of the staff there and others referring on. And so, yeah, I think like as a leader, it's interesting. There's certain leadership positions, aren't there? The principal might not be in like what's happening in year two art on a Wednesday afternoon, for example, but they're responsible for setting a tone and a culture. And people want to know that that's the type of tone, culture, person I can work with and for. So therefore, as a leader, how do I let other, like you might know who how you are and who you are, but how do you make the broader world aware into that realm, I think is sort of fairly important. It's interesting because in my own private life, I don't do any social media. Old school. But so LinkedIn thing is a thing. Being a part of AIS and speaking at this conference over here and being on a school review committee thing over there and actually letting people see who you are and get a feel for who you are and then hear your perspectives on life and education and people and why do they want to work here and not down the road? I would hope it's because they're inspired to actually go, wow, there's an opportunity there for me as a person, me as a professional, and what a space to be in is I think that's really important that as a leaders we reflect how that happens. So I've been incredibly blessed with the staff that have applied and are still applying. Like last night, I had three more job applications come through for jobs at school. Like it's been quite overwhelming, to be honest with you. And in any other climate, if I was up to year nine, for example, I would want to take those staff and actually just create roles to help us grow. But unfortunately, I've been saying no to excellent people who already carrying leadership positions in schools. And I'm saying no to them purely just because of my numbers means I can only have X number of staff. It's been something I was not prepared for, to be honest with you.
A good problem to have. And also the importance of you're responsible for shaping your workforce. You can't expect others to do it, nor can you expect a system to do it. Does that resonate?
Absolutely. Like, you know, when I finished at St. Phillips, we had a HR department and things like that, but at the end of the day, it's my name on the bottom of the contract. And at the end of the day, it's the school and how we want this school. We've got a vision. We've got our values. And I want to know that people are a part of that. And so, therefore, bringing people into the team and you're creating, you're shaping a team, you're building you're building the winning team. I find that's a responsibility that I take very, very seriously.
And do you think more broadly, about the system that we have and professional development, do you think we're doing enough in the current climate to develop that next generation of leader?
I think we can do more. I think there's some good things that go on. But I think we can do more in that. I've had some different approaches to that over time. I like look for opportunities to give people different leadership roles and opportunities throughout the school day and term and things like that that would otherwise might sit with a coordinator of whatever. Oh, that comes under their umbrella, they can do it. Actually, is there a way that I can speak into the life of a young person that gives them the opportunity to have that first leadership foray so they're learning that part of education and that part of schooling. And then we give them some feedback on that part there is really, really important. Like there's a lot that goes along the way. Like it's not just one day, okay, you can now ready to apply for a leadership role. So I think it's in that preparation work and how people see themselves and carry themselves is also really, really important. And having the courage to talk into someone's way of being, as well as what they do, is really, it's character and competency, right? And easy to talk into the competency, maybe a little bit harder to speak into the character. But if you want to know you've got their best heart at heart and you want good things for them, actually being willing to speak into that and recognize, hey, that showed leadership. When the way you spoke in that staff meeting, that was leadership tendencies, you know? Like, that's the stuff that I think people, how you can continue to develop people in that space. Like, as a faith guy, you know, David took down a Goliath. Yeah, wow. But there's a verse that says, with integrity of heart and skillful hands, he led the people. And so I think that that's something I've always carried now as a leader, is actually I need to have integrity of heart for other people, and I need to have some skillful hands in actually how I am as a leader and intentionally developing people and being aware and all of those types of little nuances that go with it. It's heart and hands working together for people.
And Darren, as we come to sort of closing out our show, we always ask personal reflections. And so, you know, in these early days of Marsden Park, what's your aspiration and hope for that school in the next 5 years?
Oh, wow. Well, in 5 years, we'll be up to year 11. Yeah. So that'd be good. Hopefully HSC will feel a little bit different in that point in time, so we can think about life a bit differently that way. The hope and aspiration is that it continues to be a joyful learning community where everyone feels highly valued, whether you're, you know, it's like my wife who loves her company and her own book, or whether you are loving the stage and everything in between, there is a space for you to be appreciated, valued, and encouraged to thrive and succeed. That it's a school that's actually reaching out into the community, both locally and beyond. And so I'm really big on actually, I believe there's a mandate on our school to actually set a pace and to set an example that other schools can look at and glean from and, wow, okay, they're doing that already. How can we take on that? So just because we're young doesn't mean we can't be setting the example and show some leadership in the broader scheme of education. And I'm looking forward to the team that we assemble here at Marsden Park over the next 5 years.
We also love to ask the crystal ball question, the future of schooling. Over the next 10 to 20 years, what do you think, if you looked into the crystal ball, what would it look like?
Oh, I think that things like hours of schooling's got to change. I think the way we deliver courses has got to change, but I think that heart for people doesn't change. So I think that continues to resonate. I think the way that we can engage meaningfully, like actually in community as opposed to inside the fenced walls, I would love to see that. I'd love to see that changed and challenged as well.
All right. Well, that brings us to our favourite segment. Our favourite segment, Matt, or my favourite segment? I'm never sure.
Definitely your favourite. Let's go 6 in 60 seconds.
Oh, you're so passionate, exciting, Matt. 6 in 60 seconds. The rules are one word or idea. That's the only rules. But, hey, no one ever follows the rules completely, Darren, so you be the judge of what you want to do. We'll get started. One educational narrative that's been underrated or overrated in the past decade.
I'm going to go with underrated. I think we can do real meaningful engagement, real world, not just stuff that happens inside the school walls. I think we can do stuff externally, underrated.
One underrated role in a school.
Front reception. Set the tone, voice of the school, face of the school, conflict resolution, front reception.
What the most interesting PD you've ever done?
I'm going to go with Crucial Conversations by Vital Smarts. Changed the way I was able to engage with people, and we did that with everyone at school and changed the culture of the school, the tone of the conversations.
If you could change one rule or one thing in education, what would it be?
Oh, yeah, there's too many. I'm going to go with just a general compliance. I think we've been too risk adverse.
One book worth reading?
School Culture Rewired.
And one person we should interview on the podcast.
Kerry McDiarmid, principal at St. Mary's Cathedral School in the centre of Sydney. Was the principal at St. Clair's before that.
Yeah, a little clap there. The audience like that. I think that's going to be a 9 out of 10 there. You've pretty much stuck to the rules. Well played. So
I had a lot of words to say in the previous 50 minutes.
That brings an end to our show for today. I hope you've enjoyed our chat with Darren. Matt, closing comments. Hit us with them. I know you've got them.
So probably some reflections from me, a real conversation today around purpose, around culture and well-being. I really like that notion that Darren spoke about, that he's made for community and has that deep sense of connection, that sense of self. I think that notion of bringing the best out of people and then sort of putting that team around him. So there was a really sort of clear idea there around purpose. The culture piece, I love that notion that every rule is there to be broken. What's the next iteration? But more importantly, to create a culture of playfulness, of joy. We can still be professional, but we can capture awe and wonder. And I was really taken by that idea of well-being and how you can change culture through a well-being program and people taking their first steps. So for me this morning, purpose, culture and well-being were really highlights.
Yeah, and for me, I kind of had a couple of similar ones. I loved that comment you made about playful but professional, around how you are creating that cultural piece. You can see it in your being. And I think, you know, I can imagine the staff that you work with, that joyful nature that you bring to the school on a day-to-day basis and bringing the joy to people's lives, both as students, but also as staff. And it would be no surprise to me that, you know, I imagine you doing school tours and that joyfulness that you're bringing to your community would be a significant reason why parents are buying into your community. And I think just that importance of bringing that on a day-to-day basis, it's sometimes, I think, easy as a school leader to get bogged down in the challenges of being a leader, but rising above that and always putting on that not joyful nature. And I think I like that healthy stretch analogy that you gave around the rubber band and finding where that healthy stretch is, and also that professional responsibility that you have as a leader to take those opportunities to speak, to be a part of like the AISs of the world, and to use LinkedIn to take that responsibility for yourself of creating that narrative of how you're going to recruit staff. And it's, as you said, it's your name at the bottom of the page. And I think taking that responsibility, you know, seriously and doing the best you can with that is something that we should remember. Darren, look, thank you for giving up your time to be on the podcast. If there's any closing comments that you would like to share with the audience, and also where's the best place that people can find you if they want to connect further with you after hearing the interview.
Yeah, I want to thank you, Luke and Matt. You guys do a great job. I love listening to this podcast and hearing people's stories. I think we still resonate with story. So I think it's important what you're doing. Just learning with and from each other. Thank you, everyone, for putting up with my fast paced talking. Hopefully you didn't race a red light while you were listening to it. And please reach out at Marsden Park Anglican College or see me on LinkedIn. And I'd love to hear from you and discuss education and future possibilities.
Excellent. Well, for the audience out there, please remember, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show. Don't forget to share the love and tell a few of your colleagues or maybe that person responsible for your PD that, hey, your staff should be listening to Ed Leaders. As I mentioned at the top of the show, if you're not already signed up to the Ed Leaders newsletter, you can do so at edleaders.com.au. Thanks again to today's sponsors. And we'd be internally grateful if you could check them out as they help make this professional learning free for you. You can connect with Ed Leaders and both of us on LinkedIn, where we'll keep you up to date with all the latest of what's going on for us. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Go well.